Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning to the people who are currently living in other dimensions next door to ours. Good morning to the frequency travelers that are tuning in to other worlds right next door inside of your wall. Good morning to the warlocks and the witches and the wizards and the lovers and the wrestlers and the knights in shining armor. It is August the 27th. It's August the 27th. August the 27th, 2021. August the 27th, 2021, right around 8:30 in the morning time, here in Utah, the cattle are heading to the range, the cowboys are sharpening their pistols. Yeah, it's August the 27th, 2021. Right around 8:30 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. And I'm just drinking my coffee here in Utah. But if you're listening on a shortwave radio from someplace else, this could be Saturday night, this could be Sunday night. It's probably 5950 kilohertz, WRMI, out of Miami, Okeechobee. Within the Everglades is revealed a temple of gold. Within that temple is a cave full of mold. Eating the mold is a crazy French bulldog named Greg, or maybe, yeah, Ginger. And Ginger is angry. Ginger can't wipe her butt. No Frenchie can. And this makes Ginger angry and sad. And if you're listening on a shortwave radio, the notes for this podcast broadcast can be found by going to dfgtc.org/show notes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie.org/show notes. And if you pick the right date, you'll get the right notes. But that's the best I can do for you buddy out there in radio world. The best I can do for you. Wish I could help you more. Wish I could send you someplace magical. But I can't. First topic, we're going to read a little bit of the news, but I'm going to say this is the kind of article I can read these days and not get too angry. This article was published on August the 24th, 2021 in the Age of Boblimpdoc. The article was written by Ben Cost, that's Charlie Oscar Sierra Tango, Ben Cost, and it was published by the New York Post. Headline, breaking news. Woman banned from zoo after unhealthy relationship with chimp. He loves me, she says, and I read on. Forget a monkey's uncle. This woman wants to be one's wife. A monkey-loving woman has been banned from visiting a male chimpanzee at a zoo in Antwerp, Belgium. After officials declared their relationship unhealthy for the animal's socialization with other chimps. I love that animal. I love that animal. And he loves me. I love that animal. I really love him. We're gonna get married. that's a bit of elaboration on my part. Addie Timmermans told Belgian channel ATV of her simian soulmate, according to Lad Bible. The heartsick woman had reportedly been visiting the male chimp named Cheetah, or Keetah, on a weekly basis for 4 years in what she described as a real, and I quote, relationship. During their visits, the two bar-crossed lovers would reportedly blow kisses and wave to each other through the glass of the primate's enclosure, although thankfully they didn't engage in any interspecies whoopee. Nonetheless, Timmermans believes that their attraction is mutual. Unfortunately, the zoo has since put the kibosh on their unorthodox love affair, as it's reportedly caused Keetah to get shunned by his fellow apes. When Keetah is constantly surrounded by visitors, the other animals ignore him and don't consider him part of the group. Zoo curator Sarah Lafoe told ATV of the primate pariah, who reportedly spends 15 hours outside of human visiting times completely alone as the result of his banishment. Lafoe explained, "An animal that is too focused on people is less respected by its peers. We want Keetah to be a chimpanzee as much as possible." Shouldn't have kidnapped the animal from the jungle. Oh, that's not in the article. Timmermans, for one, is devastated over her excommunication from the zoo. And I quote, "I haven't got anything else," the heartbroken gal protested. "Why do they want to take that away?" She added that her exile was especially unfair, as other zoo-goers are still allowed to visit her primate paramour. Unfortunately, the ban may ultimately prove futile. Zoo officials don't think that Keetah will ever be able to reintegrate into chimp society, as his exposure to humans began at an early age. Well, if you're around humans, that's worse than being raised by wolves, Keetah. Originally a pet, the young chimp was donated to the wildlife facility. Keetah was a pet. Then Keetah was given away to the wildlife jail at an age when he became unmanageable and has spent 30 of the last 38 years in captivity, Lad Bible reported. As a result, Keetah is very friendly with people, to the detriment of his relationship with his own kind. He was even seriously injured during a 2008 fight with other male chimps. Hoo-hoo-hoo! Indeed, researchers from Chicago's Lincoln Park Zoo have found that chimpanzees raised by humans had difficulties integrating with other chimps with social deficiencies lasting for decades after their release from captivity. File this under chimpanzee love. So what do you guys think? And you'd say, well, Dan, didn't you promise you would not read the news? And this is a true statement. I promised I wouldn't read the news. But from my perspective, this is, you know, this is the kind of news that's both newsworthy and probably doesn't represent a high stress risk. I think a few things should be said up front. As a Christian, I do not believe you can have any type of relationship like this with an animal and still have a relationship with God. Okay? So if you're a Christian and you have crossed beyond the basic, you know, friendly, maybe even agape love between a human and an animal, and you've crossed over into romantic love or whatever, I think you got problems. I think you need some help. Okay? You know, I'm going to say this, I'll get just right to the guts of it. These animals, no matter how smart they seem, no matter how intelligent they seem, and they are very intelligent, okay? Just like the dogs I hang out with here, they're pretty smart. But that doesn't really mean they have any type of choice in the situation. They really don't. You know what would have been best for Kita? For Cheetah, I'll just say the name spelled, you know, Charlie Hotel India Tango Alpha. You know what would have been best for Cheetah? To be left alone. You ever see that documentary Blackfish about the orca whales attacking trainers? Do you know what would have been best for all of those orcas? All of them? I think to leave them alone. I think probably we shouldn't kidnap baby orcas. We probably should never have done that. Now, that being said, the intelligence of people regarding animals changes over time. So it's possible that you can look at this from a different lens, okay? If you were to say, Dan, what about Native Americans hunting whales? Well, okay. But I would also say that there's a big difference between hunting a whale to just get by, to subsistence, to survive as coastal Salish Indians or as Eskimos or as people, indigenous peoples of the Arctic Circle. You have to hunt whale to survive. And yet, if you look at their rituals involving whales and nature, it's highly respectful. It's not Christian, but it's highly respectful. Let's point that out. There is nothing respectful about this woman thinking she's in love with this chimpanzee. And as far as the other chimpanzees go, I kind of get it. I mean, there are all sorts of creatures you don't want to raise your baby. Great white sharks, you don't want them raising your baby. You know, probably, I don't know, hyenas, you probably don't want them raising your baby either. But probably at times, and let's just get right to it, it doesn't have to be true, but it's often very true, probably the worst creature on planet Earth at times to raise your child ever, ever, ever is another human being. And so I get these chimpanzees having this issue. I look around at my fellow human beings in the United States of America, in all the great cities, acting like cowardly little tyrannical freaks. And I say, you know, these other chimps are onto something. Probably Kita spent too much time around the douchebags, around the pieces of crap. And so when Kita got back, Kita had all kinds of attitudes. Oh, I can poop in the community pool. I can piss on your head. I can establish a government of Kita. Hey, you want to vote? You want a tax? You want some food that contains microplastics and asbestos? I was raised by humans. These animals don't have a choice. And before you go, oh, Dan's all PETA or whatever, no, I'm not. I'm a meat eater. I'm a predator. But I respect the fact of what I am. You need to learn who and what you are and accept it. Because once you do, you can control it. But if you pretend that you're something else, oh, well, I'm like the deer of the field. No. No, you're not. You're a hunter and you're a killer. That is also what you are. You are capable of peace. You are capable of love. And by the grace of God, you were given a soul. And by the way, that's the part of you that should tell you that thinking you can have a romantic relationship with a chimp is wrong if you have a soul. But if you strip away the soul and you strip away the city and you strip away the bullshit, what you're left with is a vicious, vicious, highly intelligent killer. I mean, so smart, so intelligent, that really in many ways, we never needed rifles to take out all the creatures on Earth. We just had to be our smart little selves, start our little avalanches and landslides, and oh, let's scare the buffalo into the canyon. Let's scare the buffalo into the canyon. And guess what? That wasn't a Wiley, whatever, whoever, Wyatt Earp, or any of the Buffalo Cowboys. That wasn't the 19th century robber freaks. It wasn't the drunks on the railroad scaring the buffalo, or at one point, the woolly mammoth into the canyon, is a greatest hit of mass murder for humans going back probably 30,000 years. And we learned that trick really early. We learned how to do psyops very soon. Something to think on also these days. These mind games we play, these tricks, you think they're new? You think they just arrived on the train or arrived with Operation Paperclip? You can call it lesser magic. You can call it sorcery. You can simply call it psychology. But scaring buffalo into a canyon is a greatest hit of mass killing going back 30,000 years or more. So please tell me, what do you think you are? If you want to eat plants and rice, God bless, that is your choice. But what do you think you are? Yes, you're a Christian if you're a Christian. Yes, you're a human being. But if you pretend for a second you're not a predator, then you're a liar. That's what you are. And this woman that thinks she's in love with a chimp is lying to herself. And the nicest thing we could ever do to Keita, and this is a shout out to both the idiot woman who thinks she's in love and the zoo director, the nicest thing we could do for these animals is leave them alone. Zoos are not good things. They don't really teach a very positive message, especially if you believe in freedom. They teach kind of a crappy message. I am okay with you hunting the deer to put food on your table. I'm okay with you raising the cow to put food on your table, raising the pig. I get it. I like it. But what I'm not okay with is mocking them. What I'm not okay with is torturing them. What I'm really not okay with is pretending that you can have a mutual relationship with an animal that's in a prison. You can't. Sorry. Next topic. And if you're listening on shortwave radio, this is 5950 kilohertz, WRMI, out of Miami, Okeechobee, from a swamp, and it's a swamp. There will be gators and python and rats and all kinds of weird birds with beaks filled with poison. And they're coming for you as we speak. But Florida man will hold them back. Florida man with his chainsaw and his potato gun that fires grenades. Florida man, protect us from the wild gators. Florida man, protect us from the birds filled with poison. Florida man, stand forth against the beasts of the sea. Be our breakwater against the storms. Be our shield in the times to come. Florida man, we believe in you. And we love you. Yeah, so if you're listening on a shortwave radio, this is WRMI, 5950 kilohertz out of Miami, Okeechobee. And the notes for this broadcast Bodcast, podcast, modcast, whatever cast. Excuse me, I just burped some coffee. The notes for this show can be found by going to dfgtc.org/show notes and picking the right date. And if you pick the right date, you'll get the right notes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie .org/show notes. And boy, those notes are critical. Next topic, the interregnum. Interregnum. That's a fancy, fancy word. In the 17th century, there was a period. I think it was 1649 to 1660. But it's considered the interregnum. This was the period just after the ending of the English Civil War, more or less, after the ending of the life of Charles I, and his head did roll, right? But the period between the kings is called the interregnum. That's what it was called. And that's what that word means, a period between rulers. You can call it a power vacuum if you want to. An interregnum could be called a power vacuum. Now, why am I talking about the interregnum concept? Because sometimes I feel like the great discontinuity is just too big for a lot of people to want to munch on, and I get it. It's kind of a scary topic. But if we want to think more close to home, I believe what we are on the verge of, or potentially in the first few months of, could be called an interregnum. A period of time between, well, different groups claiming power. Now, if you're a libertarian, okay, or you're an ANCAP, voluntarist, agorist, anarchist like myself, good. You look at this and you're not sure what to make of it. What would it be? What are the opportunities in the interregnum? Well, I think there are a lot of opportunities. You know, I have a good friend, Jim Davidson. Jim Davidson, shout out to Jim. He is currently working on his Ozarkia project. And if you want to learn more, you can go to freedomlanddao.com, learn more about what Jim is doing, but he's working on a freedom-based, liberty-based, intentional community in the Ozarks, and it's called Ozarkia. And, you know, it's starting out at that scale it needs to, and it's going to grow. And I think what he's doing is an example of an intelligent kind of response or a kind of a pretty smart strategy for the interregnum, for this period of time when we might be talking about a power vacuum. If I'm basically right about the military psyops, and I think that I am, they indicate weakness. They don't indicate strength. That means that the center, in terms of power, is not able to hold on. Currently, you probably have governors and mayors and sheriffs and all kinds of weird people at different levels of government all around the country trying to figure out who's in charge. Now you could say, well, isn't President Biden in charge? Well, that's what I'm saying. We could be at the beginning of the interregnum, or it might be just a few, you know, weeks or months away. But I don't think he's in charge of much at this point. I think that he's probably a lot like Baghdad Bob. You know, he's telling people that we're doing great, we're doing fine, as American tanks roll behind him, you know, on live camera feed. So I kind of think that that's where the president is. I call him the mayor of Washington, D.C., because my instincts tell me that's about as much power as he has. He probably does have some military power still. I don't know that he has any nuclear authority. I would not be surprised if there are multiple people, multiple folks within the nuclear infrastructure who are currently technically in a state of mutiny, which means they won't resign their position. They won't simply resign, but they're probably saying no. No, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. I could be wrong, but I'm kind of hoping I'm right. And it doesn't mean these are good people. It just means they're people. And when they sense a power structure weakness, they're trying to figure out, well, where do I survive? Keep in mind, these government people are deathly afraid of not having a job. So if they sense that, you know, President Biden is basically the mayor of Washington, D.C., they're probably asking themselves, where is the power. That's what voters do. That's what statists do. That's what good soldiers and good bureaucrats do. They ask the question, where is the power? Now, libertarians and anarchists and agorists and ANCAPs like us, we do sometimes ask a similar question. We simply want to know what to avoid. We ask the question, where are the parasites? And if the parasites are in a certain location, we just say, you know what? We'll go someplace else. And the other thing about the interregnum that is coming, and we could be in the beginning of it, I don't know, is that I think a lot of Americans who got suckered by the whole, if you vote, things can get better culture, I think a lot of Americans are going to start to look more local and ask the question, the more important question, how do I keep food on the table? How do I keep my family safe and alive? How do I live? And the good news, brothers and sisters, about those basic questions is that libertarians and especially anarchists have good answers. And they apply at scale. And they don't involve force. And so perhaps the interregnum is an opportunity for all of us to re-embrace freedom. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I know that a lot of folks are saying, oh, Dan, it's the new world order reset, and there's only one way, and only Road to Serfdom 3 can save us on Facebook or Twitter with this terribly dumb one idea. But what I will say is this. In the interregnum, there is opportunity to reinvent yourself, to reinvent your community, to make your community strong. And the only way it's going to be strong is with freedom, period. The strongest bonds are the bonds that come together without force. The strongest bonds are the ones that are sealed by choice. And the best people to have on your team, and people who have led teams actually know this, are people that want to be there. If somebody doesn't want to be there, I guarantee you the outcomes will be bad. The interregnum could be crazy. I think that parts of this country could look like Mad Max in a few months. And again, this is best case scenario. If you're an optimist, listen to what I'm saying. You need to know how to purify water. You need to buy water filters. You need to have 6 to 12 months of food on hand. Right now, I have maybe 2 or 3. My goal is 6 to 12. You probably need to learn how to use a weapon. I'm sorry. You know the little conversation about predators? You may not want to harm anybody, but I can promise you there are folks out there that might want to harm you. And here's your answer to the other question. The disciples, you know, the ones that cut the ear off the soldier in the garden, they carried swords. And if they lived today, they would carry semi-automatic rifles probably, or something better. But the bottom line is, Jesus never said, don't defend yourself. So if you're an optimist, you should learn how to use a gun. You don't have to be Rambo. Newsflash, most people aren't, even people in the military. Most of the people you'll confront who are trying to steal what you have are cowards, or they're tired, or they're desperate. Most of them don't want to kill either. So if you're willing to defend yourself and your family, you already have an edge on everybody, no matter the weapon they have. The most powerful weapon in the world is just a chunk of steel if you can't pull the trigger. Sorry. And I don't care how many steel targets you hit. You might hit a whole bunch. But I'm guessing, since I've never been in combat and I have enough respect as a former soldier to say there's a big difference, I'm guessing there's a big difference, you know. Big difference between hitting steel targets and you know, hitting people. In the interregnum, there's going to be crazy. So you should prepare for it. And I got to say, there are systems that were built in this neo-Stalinist hellhole, like the entire nuclear industry, that are so fragile from a systems perspective and so dependent upon supply chains that I don't think I'd recommend living near a boiling water nuclear reactor. I wouldn't live within 50 miles, and I certainly wouldn't live downwind of one. But who knows the wind direction? You know, people say, oh, there's an ice age. There's a global warming. You know what I'll tell you? Life is unpredictable. So if you know the wind direction today, maybe you know it tomorrow. All I'm saying is I would not live near a boiling water nuclear reactor. I wouldn't do that, my friends. But in the interregnum, I think there's going to be potential to do amazing things. Like my friend Jim and other people like him, you know, there's a chance for us to do things as anarchists, as ANCAP, as entrepreneurs, as folks who simply want to make a fair wage, a fair buck, who simply want to build something and give people value and be rewarded in the marketplace of reality for doing so. There's going to be opportunity in the interregnum. In some ways, that's the hopefulness in my heart that allows me to wake up in the morning, the possibility that that is what's coming. I don't know. It could be blind faith. It could be dumb faith. And even if that is what's coming, can I emphasize this point? It's still going to be really hard. And no matter what happens next, the dollar, the US dollar, is toast. So if your plans for the future are based upon dollar-denominated assets, contracts, and other derivatives, I might get into something else soon. And I wouldn't go to crypto. You can if you want to, but I would buy physical gold and silver, ammo, maybe even, yeah, boxes, cases of cigarettes. Cases of cigarettes, cases of, you know, tampons that don't contain poisonous crap, like, you know, tampons women would actually like to use. Cases of deodorant and razor blades. If you don't want to buy gold or silver and it's not available, there's stuff you can buy that would almost be as good or as gold or silver in the time to come. A few cases of whiskey you don't intend to drink. Whiskey, cigarettes, tampons, there's a bunch of stuff. Deodorant, I would even say underwear. Like if you bought a whole bunch of underwear, oh, Dan, that's crazy. And then I think also learning to sew is something we should all do. So buying a sewing kit. You don't have to buy a sewing machine unless you want to. And, you know, if you're going to get one, I might get one that's, you know, old school and powered by your foot. I know that sounds crazy. But if I was going to get a sewing machine, I think I would go, yeah, non-electric. But, you know, learn to sew. There's things you can do. I think the shortwave radio stuff that I'm doing with my friend Justin is a great idea. I think CB radio is great. You don't need a license for CB. And you can actually reach out and actually contact people at great distances sometimes if the environmental conditions are right, if the atmospheric conditions are right. But what's more important, you can reliably, on a local scale, you know, within that 5 to 10 to 20 miles, you can build yourself a local network. And a lot of communities, having a range of 5 or 10 miles is plenty. So get yourself a CB. Get your friend a CB that lives in the same small town, or who knows, maybe lives in the same city. Learn to use these tools. There are things we can do. We don't have to give up. I don't think we should play pretend. I don't think we should live in fantasy land. I think the time of communist solutions and militaristic solutions is over. If your solution is go blow some people up, you know, even if, I'm not even going to say, you know, screw you. Your world is over. We can't do that anymore. We can't. Not unless we all want to die. And if that's the plan, that's the plan. But I don't know. I kind of think that Jesus would prefer that we make a choice towards life and doing the right thing. It's a theory. So, next topic. So, me and a friend of mine, we went out for a drive last weekend, my friend Justin and I. We drove out past Rangeley, we drove out past Broncosville, We went out beyond the dell and the dale, the river and the stream. We crossed the valley. We crossed the moon. We drove deep into the heart of Utah. We went beyond the White River and the Green River to the place where Chipeta Falls turns into the Red Rain Cavern. And the dead walk with the crow till the time of Gimbus Feast. And we went deeper into Utah. We kept just driving. And out there in Utah, beyond Rangeley, beyond Broncosville, we saw huge, great ranges of oil fields, fracking fields, digging for coal, digging for mineral, digging for uranium, digging for gold, digging for diamond. Miles and miles of rigs pulling the energy out of the ground here in Utah. We stopped to ask directions, and an old man named Scott McGrimbles told us, "You are in Mormonia." We stopped to ask directions. We stopped to ask directions. And an old man named Scott McGrimbles told us, "You are in Mormonia." You are in Mormonia. This is what is to come. And then a white mist settled over the land. And then Scott pointed at armies of missionaries in white shirts and name tags carrying stylish yet compact submachine guns. He showed us a new temple just 5 miles west of Splinkton, where the new temple priestess will hold court with 87 gods. He showed us a new temple just 5 miles west of Splinkton, where the new temple priestess will hold court with 87 gods of Taurus. This is what he showed us. He showed us a spaceport. He showed us rocket ships taking off to the moon. He showed us a computer. A computer 7 miles tall. It had a waterfall to cool itself. And all of this was in Mormonia. He showed us a bowling alley. This wonderful bowling alley. It was so big, it had over 2,000 lanes. And all of the good people of Mormonia would go there at night and bowl and laugh and drink their soda. And they would talk of a future of love and goodness and the land and alfalfa and all the wonderful rubies and diamonds in Mormonia. Scott McGrimbles then pointed and showed us a community swimming pool that was 99 times larger than any swimming pool ever built. He showed us a $20 silver note. He showed us a $20 silver note. Scott McGrimbles pulled it out of his pocket and he said, "Look at this, buddy." And there was Brigham Young on one side and Joseph Smith on the other. And it said, "In Mormonia, we trust." Thank you. My friend and I, we drove deep into Utah. We saw the fields of grain. We saw the granaries and stores filled to the rooftop. We saw people smiling and happy, and a blue sky, and the possibility of human beings, and maybe not being perfect, but they don't have to be total jerks. And like I said, there were armies of missionaries, armies of young men and women, nicely dressed in black or dark navy blue slacks, black leather shoes, a really nice belt, a white shirt, a name tag, and carrying stylish, compact submachine guns. This was Mormonia. This is what the future showed me. Next topic. So, I was joking around with friends that I'm living with here a few nights ago, maybe last weekend. And I had made the joke and had called the COVID the Pokemon plague. I don't know if you remember this, but like 5 years ago, during the great election year of 2016, where Trump faced off against Hillary, and your vote really, 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 really mattered. It so mattered. It was so critical that you voted. There was that Pokemon game where people would wander around the world following a virtual map on their Pokemon smart device or GameCube or whatever. They would follow this virtual map to all kinds of places, to include military bases and toxic waste dumps. They were chumps. They were being led astray. The computer had its day. Pokemon plague. Because when I look at the way people are acting, it's like they'll get a news flash and it's like SimCity 2000, where they'll put up a little fake newspaper with a fake article about how angry people are. But in this case, it's some alert from the WHO, from the World Health Organization, or the CDC, or some other fruitcake like Dr. Fauci, whatever that guy's name is. Some other fruitcake is telling you to wear one mask, two masks. Florida is dying. The incinerators are burning. Florida is so bad, they have to pile the bodies up, and the burning bodies light up the night sky in Miami now. But that all seems like crap to me, and when I check out these stories, they seem like crap. So it does seem like a video game. Like, you're not involved in a pandemic, you're not helping anybody, you're playing a video game, and you're feeling like you're winning points and scoring points because people say, oh, thank you for wearing a mask, thank you for wearing two masks, thank you for getting vaccinated, thank you for being so obedient. Here is a food pellet. And really, calling it the Pokemon plague is nicer than saying that you're just inside of some Skinner box being tortured and being fed food pellets. At least you have some notion of agency while you're playing the Pokemon game. But it's BS. It's crap. And your smartest move at this point, if you give a crap about yourself and the people you love, is to do what the computer learned to do in war games and don't play. The only winning move with the COVID-19 is not to participate. It isn't to say, oh, Dan, it's kind of real. It kind of hurts some people. You know, viruses kind of hurt people every year forever before 2020. They did. Hospitals lost hundreds of thousands of people every year to preventable hospital-acquired infections. fungal, bacterial, viral, single-celled, amoeba, you name it. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people died, and they didn't have to. That's your hospital. That's the place you trust. And this is before the COVID. So some of you say it's kind of real. I think that's kind of bullshit. Unless you want to believe that because I can dribble a basketball, I should be an NBA professional player making $20 million a year. If you want to make that argument, then sure, your magical Pokemon plague is real. But I'm kind of thinking I'm not an NBA player and your plague is bullshit. Next topic. There is a generally held belief amongst hunters and fishermen and people that go after animals and nature. There is a generally held belief, even amongst many animal psychologists and behaviorists, that there is often nothing more dangerous than an animal in distress. I'm not saying that there isn't potentially a meal, you know? That's why wolves and coyotes and hyenas will track something that's dying. But they'll usually wait until it's dead and then eat it. It's not a great idea to interact with an animal in distress. It's just better off to wait for it to just get immobilized, either dead or nearly dead. But an animal that is not dead and is simply wounded is an animal that can be potentially more dangerous than it would be normally because it really isn't thinking the way it would normally. And I mention this because it's one of the ways you need to look at the U.S. government right now. And perhaps even some of your local city governments, like the city of Chicago government would be a good example. It is an animal in distress. The smartest move you have is to avoid it. I'm not saying obey it. That's not the word I used. I said avoid it. Figure out ways to work around it. I would not highly recommend saying, well, let's go and let's storm the cop shop. That's crazy. I'm going to let you on a little secret. The cop shop, the bureaucracy, the whole structure of your city will destroy itself. You don't need to help. It's already happening. That crazy-looking mayor of Chicago, she is the harbinger. She is an indication of what the future is. You do not need to do anything to the government of Chicago. That government is going to, you know, take care of itself. And it's not going to have a good day. Animals in distress are dangerous. So when you are thinking about the U.S. government right now, and you're thinking about the governments of the world, and you're thinking about what you should do, what your best strategies are, I think it's important to recognize that you can't potentially make, right now, you might not be able to make any good predictions about what the government will do next. And when I say the government, I don't mean the people you voted for. I don't mean that, okay? Whatever you think that was or is, that was make-believe. I mean the actual people who believe they run things. I mean the people that actually believe there's a steering wheel and they're holding on to it, and when they turn right, the ship turns right, and when they turn left, the ship turns left, and I know I should be saying starboard and port, but screw you. There are people that believe, based upon the past, that they are in charge. What I would contend right now is that they have so destroyed their structure that they're in charge of nothing. They are standing on something that's about to fall apart. They are in that Wile E. Coyote moment where they are over the canyon. They still think they're running, but they're running in midair and they're going to fall to the ground. But it's because of that, that in many ways, right now, they've never been more dangerous. There are people who don't believe in nuclear weapons, and I have made the argument that it's possible that the United States government hasn't been able to replace the tritium in our nuclear stockpile for 15 or 20 years. They may not have been doing it. They may not have been doing it completely. So it's possible that many of our hydrogen bombs have just basically become good old-fashioned fission bombs again. I don't want to give a little quick tutorial on a hydrogen bomb, but it takes a fission initiator, a small fission device, to, you know, to kickstart the fusion reaction that becomes a hydrogen bomb explosion. That being said, that means that a lot of weapons that used to be capable of up to 2 megatons are probably 15 kilotons right now. And I don't really care. I think that's still too much. But it's possible that that's an example of something that's really happening. And yeah. But even with 15 kilotons, a crazy distressed animal could cause a lot of damage. Even if the nuclear arsenal were weaker, it's still a nuclear arsenal. It can still do a lot of destruction. 15 kilotons is pretty close to the weapons that were used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So yes, even if the tritium is no longer any good, so to speak, you could still hurt a lot of people. I'm emphasizing this because I know there are people who are getting upset and angry, and boy, you have a right to be angry. You have a right to be really angry. Don't let any of these weird mindfulness freaks tell you you don't. Tell them to screw up, to screw off, so to speak. You have a right to your anger, but the question is, what do you do with it? Do you stew in it? No. But also, I don't think it's a good idea to just go out there and start acting like a gorilla. I'm not saying that there might not come a time, but if my instincts are right, I don't think it's necessary. I think the parts of the government that are the most atrocious are already falling apart. And they're doing a good job of hiding it. But they're not doing that great a job. And their propaganda is getting thinner and dumber. And their psyops are getting weaker and sillier. And at some point, even the craziest people will just at some point say, I'm tired of being crazy. I'm tired of wearing this mask. I'm tired of doing the hokey pokey, doing Simon Says. And I think that the government itself is going to fall apart that way. I think a lot of people that work for the government are not inherently evil. They've just chosen a bad path. I did it once. I worked for the government once. It's a bad path. And a lot of people did it because they thought, I don't have another choice, Dan. I need a job. I need money. I need food. Hey, buddy, we all live on the same Death Star. I get it. And no one is clean. And no one is without sin when it comes to the Death Star. That's something important to remember. We are all participating in the sham. Even the creepy dudes out there mining crypto someplace in a basement are using electricity from a highly centralized neo-Stalinist system. So yeah, you're mining Bitcoin on the Death Star. Congratulations. The smartest thing you can do, and this applies to everything you do, is avoid the government. If there's one chance in 100... that a transaction can be tracked by the IRS and the government, then you should try to find transactions that can't be tracked, aka transactions that have no electronic signature, transactions that involve handshakes and gold, silver, or whatever script people will accept face-to-face, hand-to-hand, that's peer-to-peer. If you're doing stuff that has a huge electronic record attached to it, like a blockchain that maintains your public, unique wallet key within a transaction ledger forever and can be easily data mined and easily hooked into IP addresses, shopper's cards, credit cards, I can keep going, your freaking phone you think you control. And by the way, you don't make the chips, they do. And I promise you, they park all kinds of garbage on your chips. So even if you think you're running a secure operating system, on that computer chip, on that CPU, is a battleship of spyware. You should not be doing stuff like that. If you can avoid it, maybe you can't avoid it. Maybe your only source of income is deeply connected to all of this financial nonsense. Maybe the only way you can survive is to do that. And I get it, okay? We're on the Death Star. We're trying to survive. But if you want to know how can I be safer, the safest way you can be is to do transactions that have no record. That's it. Virtually no record. If a bookkeeper wants to manage his or her internal accounts, that is the bookkeeper's business. You're running the store. But I personally don't really care if you ever keep track of me as a real person. And if I have to use a fake name every time I go to your store, I will. The best transactions you can participate in right now in 2021 are transactions that have no electronic signature, period. And if you think those transactions are impossible, then I don't understand where you're coming from, man. I think you've given up. Okay, those transactions were possible for thousands of years, and they will be possible for thousands of years in the future. The thing that you might be trusting in right now that is highly dependent upon a centralized electricity structure, a centralized power structure, centralized power generation, yeah, that might not be possible in a few years. The internet as we know it is highly dependent upon the deep state. The deep state is falling apart and it might not work in a few years. And there's a lot of people out there that used to know how to do things without computers. They're all going to be dead in a few years. You could hop, skip, and jump yourself to a dark age given how dumbed down people already are. And unlike idiocracy, and I've said this before, stupid doesn't get 500 years. Stupid probably doesn't get 50 years. Stupid probably gets 5 years before something really, really bad happens and it's over. Think of all the technicians that can't solve a problem without a tablet. Think of all the computer people that can't solve a problem without a search engine. Think of all the people that got rid of all their books because, hey, they've got a Kindle. It's not just that these things are corrupt. That is irrelevant. These things will not last. And the smartest move you have vis-a-vis the government is to not taunt it, to avoid it. It's a sick and dying animal in distress. If you've been listening on shortwave radio, this has been WRMI, 5950 kilohertz out of Miami, Okeechobee, near the Everglades, near the Great Swamp, where all the swamp beats wrestle in the night. It's either Saturday or Sunday night, between 11 p.m. and midnight, Eastern Standard Time. And if you've been listening, the notes for this podcast broadcast can be found by going to dfgtc.org/show notes. And if you want to donate, you can go to dfgtc.org/DO. That's Delta Oscar. If you want to donate, that's up to you. And if you want to email me and tell me I'm a terrible person, it's M-E, that's me, at imsully.com, Mike Echo, at imsully.com, and send me an angry email.